This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And taking a look at another issue on the upcoming ballot, the ballot that you already have for the November general election, it is the North Douglas County Fire and EMS District. And David Atkinson and Brian Burke in. Guys, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks for having us, Kyle.
So, first of all, let's just sort of set things up for the listeners since we cover such a wide area. Kind of tell us more about the district overall and sort of what areas you cover.
So North Douglas County Fire and EMS is a combination of Drain Rural Fire, Yoncalla Rural Fire, and Rice Hill Rural Fire. Yoncalla and Rice Hill merged with Drain in November of 2002. It wasn't until 2003 that they acquired the ambulance service from the city of Drain, and later in 2003 changed their name to what we know now as North Douglas County Fire and EMS. The district operates out of six fire stations. Two were inherited by Drain Rural Fire, two by Yoncalla, and two by Rice Hill. We have a North and South Battalion. In our North Battalion, we have our Station 1 in Drain, which is our headquarters and administrative building. Station 4 is Curtin. And then we move down to the South Battalion. We have Yoncalla, Rice Hill, Scotts Valley, and then up on a Goodrich Highway. The district responds to an average of about 1,400 calls a year, which is up about 57% from 2012.
So you really cover a lot of ground there, and it sounds like it made a lot of sense to be, you know, one larger district than a bunch of really small ones.
Yep, the district's already worked a lot since the 70s and 80s when they were their own rural departments. A lot of mutual aid agreements back then, and they worked and trained together for many years and decided it was time to put their heads together to create a larger organization since they were already working closely together.
So, Brian, you're fire chief. How long have you been in that role?
I've sworn in on September 30th.
Oh, boy, not long at all. Yeah. Now, were you already working with the department before that?
Yeah, I was with the department. I worked as a firefighter, paramedic, and then I did a stint as the assistant chief. I worked with Chief Ike Shannon until his retirement, and then I stepped in to replace his role September 30th.
So after only 3 weeks on the job and you're already on the radio, how's it going so far?
It's a great organization. We have great people. We have a great community that we serve. A lot of opportunity up there. A department that's very healthy as far as structurally, and we have some great opportunities, and I look forward to an optimistic future.
So how did you get into being a firefighter?
I started back in probably 1994 with Sutherland Fire Department. I had the great opportunity of training under some incredible people as a volunteer out there. At the time, I worked for Umpqua Dairy, delivering milk. I got my EMT and intermediate and my fire certs from there. From that point, I got picked up by Douglas County Fire District Number 2 to work on the ambulance and transitioned from there. I was a volunteer for many years. Currently, also the assistant chief of Oakland Rural Fire Department and doing this one full time.
So you've got a lot going on.
I'm fitting some time in.
Yeah. So, David, how'd you get into this whole arena?
Well, we were out at dinner one night and heard a whole bunch of sirens go by and decided to go check out a structure fire that was down the road. And after watching for about 10 minutes and realizing that they were understaffed, just put in an application and got on the department back in 15 and a little low on numbers. So I got moved up pretty quickly and able to drive the truck now, which is always a fun thing to do. And kind of just saw a need in the community and very involved in the community. And so decided to kind of help fill a role.
So what are some of the other things you do in the community?
Other things in community, I mean, I help out at the school districts, you know, love being involved in school athletics, whether it's running score clock. Also love working on stuff for the fire district, for fire prevention stuff and getting connected in with the kids and the community members.
Now, it's interesting. One of the things about the rural areas, which is really a good chunk of Douglas County, is that it's mostly to all volunteer, and that's always fascinated me. I was talking to one of the other departments a few weeks ago, because you look at it, the average person's life and their jobs, certain jobs that doesn't lend itself to being a volunteer firefighter, But you've got to be ready to essentially go on a dime.
Yeah, yeah. We have a lot of people that work in the community, whether it's at local hardware stores or, you know, gas station, whatever it is, and they're very generously, their bosses have allowed them to leave when they are needed to help their community, which is a great help.
So how many volunteers versus paid folks do you guys have?
Currently, I have 3 paid firefighters that are full-time. The fire chief's position's full-time. I have an office manager, and we transitioned to a part-time assistant chief, and then we have a part-time training officer. We're supplemented right now. I believe there's 62 volunteers in our area.
So if you're a volunteer, have you agreed to always be available, or do you sort of put out a schedule that says I'm available sort of under these parameters, or how does it work?
It all depends on their work and their home life, what they do. It's really important to us that you're a family person first, to take care of your kids and your family, and if you do have time, we surely appreciate the sacrifice that they make. Other ones will cover shifts. They'll sign up for shift work and hang out at the station, run the ambulance calls. But generally, most of our firefighters will respond from home during their free time. These guys are leaving dinners and leaving family events to come help out the community, and I couldn't thank them enough for what they do.
Well, I know with some of the hours that I work, being really early in the morning sometimes, and you hear about these, whether it's an accident that you need to respond to, or a home fire, or just about anything that you might be going out to. And it's got to be a bit taxing, because you could be sound asleep and suddenly you're getting dressed and out the door seconds later.
They train for that. They're really good at what they do. You hear the alarm go off. Most of us can been doing it long enough. You can listen to a radio all night and only hear your calls. It's kind of a weird gift that we have, but they do a really good job of getting a quick response.
That's interesting that you get to do that. I suspect that if I suggested having the police scanner on all night at my house, my marriage would have ended a long time ago. It's sort of how I'm thinking that's going to play out. Let's talk about this operating levy. First of all, what's the current budget for the district?
The budget currently sits at about $444,000 per year.
And what are you hoping to do with this levy? Explain how it's set up.
So, when the district was originally formed in 2002, they did not have the ambulance service, and fire needs were very different. So the tax rate back then was set at $1.21. And after things have changed and equipment has gotten older and staffing needs have needed to increase, they decided to add the operations levy, which is at 99 cents per $1,000 of taxable assessed value on your home. So the district operates at $444,000, and with this tax levy, it generates an additional $364,000 per budget year for us.
So what would that money go for?
So currently right now we need to replace a couple ambulances in the next 5 years. Those are going to run somewhere probably within a ballpark in the $300,000 range, depending on costs with parts and everything right now. I need at least one more fire truck and 2 tenders. The fire trucks, the last one we purchased, I believe was in the $700,000 range. And the tenders, I've been looking at military surplus stuff. We have 2 of them that are built on a tank mover that's been really beneficial to us, and I can remount the stuff that the equipment that's currently on our tender that we want to replace onto that chassis, and we'll get a lot of good years out of that.
And, I mean, this stuff does not come cheap.
It does not.
So, and there's no way around that. I mean,
no, it's just, it is what it is. It's the system we live in.
So, do you have other funding that comes from other sources?
I'm currently applying for any other grants that we have. We've applied for assistance to firefighter grants, the AFG grant. We're working on some stuff regionally with other departments for grant work. Just trying to see what else is out there. We also look for other ways to generate some resources. We might have some plans coming up in the future that we're working on. If they come to fruition, we'll be able to maybe have some more seasonal guys and be able to generate some other revenue without having a negative impact on our service area.
Now, I would imagine that being in a more rural area, you don't get as many calls as you would like in the city of Roseburg or Sutherland, or is that accurate?
That's kind of a tough one to answer. We're on pace to run about 1,400 calls, which is an increase of over 100 calls over the last year, and a substantial increase from when we started the levy. I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, but we cover a large area, I-5, several miles. Our service area for our fire department is roughly 54 square miles, and that would include 30 miles of I-5, which is roughly 10% of the state as far as distance for I-5.
Well, and that can certainly be a place where you get a lot of calls, because obviously we've got a lot of freeway accidents, and then they can involve semi-trucks or other things like that, and it's not a matter of going out and being there for 30 minutes. It's a matter of being out there for 3 or 4 hours sometimes.
Correct.
So we're going to take a break, talk more when we come back. David Atkinson, Brian Burke from North Douglas County Fire and EMS, the interview of podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1, True Wealth Radio with David Littlejohn at 4. The Libertarian candidate for governor in Oregon, R. Leon Noble, will be on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County program. And today we're talking about the North Douglas County Fire and EMS District with David Atkinson and Brian Burke. They've got the 5-year operating levy on your November 2022 ballot. You mentioned the things you need to get replaced. So are you dealing with some of the equipment you have now being pretty aged?
Yeah, we have a lot of our engines and our tenders were manufactured in the early 90s and up into the 2000s. And, you know, our oldest engine is from 1980 and is one of the original vehicles from Drain Rural Fire, which carried some of the original extrication equipment for North Douglas County area and responded from Sutherland to Cottage Grove all the way to Scottsburg to assist them. And it's one of our main tenders in Yoncalla, and it's seen its years. It's a little rusted. It's a big apparatus to be moving water around, and we've got other apparatuses like that have, as firefighting needs have changed, the trucks don't necessarily shift to the needs that we need to complete.
Well, and I mean, people, you think about whatever infrastructure you're dealing with. I mean, when the washing machine needs to be replaced, it needs to be replaced. And there's no two ways about it. And I mean, even much, much more important with a piece of fire equipment, you don't want to take it out there crossing your fingers that it's going to work properly when you're trying to save somebody's house.
Exactly. Correct? Yeah. We've had a lot of volunteers that are mechanically skilled and people who have assisted us with maintaining these apparatuses and giving them a longer life. So it's not a burden on the taxpayers and on the fire district response.
But you can only put so many Band-Aids on a fire truck.
That's true.
So as a rural agency, are you looking at new equipment, or do you ever find, do larger districts sometimes swap out equipment sooner and you're able to find equipment that's used but not new?
It depends. We do search around. Sometimes, a lot of times what we find out with the used equipment from the larger departments is there's a reason they're replacing that equipment. The maintenance costs might eat up some of the value that you're saving downstream. We did accept our ladder truck is a used piece of equipment, where roughly that one, if we needed to purchase a new one, would be $1.5 million or somewhere in that ballpark. And there's not a need for us to replace that piece of apparatus at this time. So we do look at some value where we can, but as far as your day-to-day first out fire engines, there's a lot of risk to take in buying something used.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. How about, you've got a large district, so do you have mutual aid agreements with some of the neighboring ones?
We do. We have mutual aid agreements with all the local departments, even up to Cottage Grove for South Lane's response. We all work well together. It's been something that's really well known in Douglas County. I think all the agencies are good working with each other. We have great relationships. We help them. They help us as things are needed. And it just becomes normal day-to-day operations.
Well, and I certainly hear that, you know, on scanner calls sometimes. And, I mean, if you're going to Cottage Grove, you're going quite a ways. Although, depending on how far you are north, maybe it's not as much as it seems for people in Roseburg. But I know that that isn't always the case, you know, around the state, talking to people other times. Folks sometimes wait. It's like, okay, that's yours. Well, good luck.
Yeah, we had a good mutual aid response at the beginning of this month with the city of Yonkol had a water issue where there's no water. We had an apartment fire. Immediately, guys from the other agencies responded as soon as we called them. We had to bring our own water in. It was a good firefight. It was well handled. Everybody did an extremely professional job. We got the job done, and then they returned back to their areas.
Now, when you have, is it how many different fire stations did you say you have?
We have six different fire stations.
So, and being in a rural area, you can only really spread those so far apart and be effective, right?
Yeah, correct. And it's, you know, fire stations were placed back in the day based off of the volunteer base of where most people lived. And over the years, that has changed, and volunteers now may live in between two different fire stations. And so, we have, you know, six different fire stations helps covers our area where most of our volunteers live.
So it's got to be a bit of a challenge, though. I just think about how Roseburg is structured with, you know, three sections of town and all of that. You've got one close by. You're already out in a rural area to begin with. So if you had less fire stations, for instance, which somebody might say would be cheaper, but yeah, what happens when something catches on fire and it's, you know, 10, 12 miles away?
It's nice to have the equipment spread out. We have, like David said, we have volunteers that live in the area. They don't just respond to the main station. They'll respond directly to a station that's closer to them and take out that piece of apparatus. It'll actually give them a quicker response to the rural area than having something slowed down.
Now, do you sometimes have folks, depending on what the incident is, do you have some people that actually respond directly to the incident if other people are bringing things from a station, or is that not how it works?
We try to minimize that. Generally, when responding, we call it a POV response, or their personal vehicle. They don't necessarily have the equipment that they need for the call. That being said, if they had to drive by something to get to an event, they might radio in that they're on scene and give us a size up and start treating some stuff. But in general, we need them to respond in the apparatus.
So for this operating levy, this is set for 5 years, so you're hoping to do a lot of things over the course of that 5 years then?
That's correct. This is our fourth renewal. The levy's passed three times. This will be our fourth passing of this at this election. Some maintenance costs, replacing two ambulances is one of the things we're looking at. We need a new tender, and we need a new fire engine for the Yonkola station.
And the buildings that you're in, are those fairly old, or do you have some like maintenance costs on those?
There's going to be maintenance costs for every building. Our main station's been has a seismic retrofit here done a couple years ago. They're in pretty good shape. We do our interior maintenance through the volunteers. A lot of them help painting, construction. We got some very strong backgrounds in that keep the cost down for our maintenance and any remodels that we're doing. We just received a grant for an infrastructure grant, so we'll be doing more work at our Yonkola station, changing up, improving our front doors and the open the entryway.
Now, for a rural fire department, like the way you're structured, do you have people actually housed at the station at certain times, or is everybody just responding when things come up?
At our main station, we do have housing that people, we have a student program that supplements that, but volunteers cover shifts and they'll stay at that main station and respond.
So you've got this on the ballot in November. Ballots have gone out in the past few days. As people are looking at that, how does this compare the levy amount now versus what's been in place already?
So there's no increase. It's just a continuation of the levy. We're not asking for an increase. It's the same one we've done the last 15 years. So we're just looking for that continuation of the levy. And we were looking at tax rates and where we compare to as far as as best we can determine. We're similar to the tax rate of Camas Valley or Tiller. And then Glen Gardner area is about the same tax rate that they're paying up at North Douglas.
So if somebody's newer to the area or whatever, that might be an important thing to look at. It's not a new tax. This is just continuing on what you've been doing.
Yeah, we didn't ask for an increase either this year. Even though costs are going up, we're trying to be as fiscally responsible as we can with this.
So if it doesn't pass, what happens then?
If it doesn't pass, I'm going to have to take a long, hard look at our budget and reprioritize some things, but we'll have to reevaluate what we're doing, and we might have to come back with another version of the tax levy at the next election.
And as we wrap up, if somebody's got a question or wants more information, how do they get connected?
They can call the fire station at 541-836-2282, or they can log on to our website at ndcfems.us and find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
All right, Brian Burke, David Akis, and North Douglas County Fire and EMS, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Kyle.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.